weaponizing words and toxic terminology. We are in a year, and we've just come out of a year, when words have been weaponized and terminology has become very toxic, and people are getting triggered. And that's required us to adjust a lot of the curriculum for the Biblical Worldview Summit to be as relevant, current, up-to-date as the current threats against us demand. Some people say, I'm not interested in public affairs or politics or anything like that. The trouble is, politics is very interested in you. And the price of apathy towards public affairs is to be ruled by evil people. Politics determines how much taxes you pay, whether you can go to the beach on a scorching hot day or not, whether you can operate your job, whether your work is considered essential or not, whether you can worship in your church or not, and so on and so forth. And the curriculum your children or grandchildren are taught if they go to a state school. And we could continue. So if we want to be apathetic towards public affairs, we will just doom ourselves and our children and grandchildren to living and under the oppression of evil people. So, how do we respond to weaponized words and toxic terminology? Have you had the frustrating experience of trying to communicate with someone who seems triggered by the words you use into jumping to conclusions which condemn you for things you never even thought to say? Are you saying that? No. When did I say anything like that? You are implying. And they just continually make connections and think, where did this come from? Why are they jumping to these conclusions? Why are they continually triggered by even some of the most innocent comments you might make? Have you become exasperated how simple words and concepts can be so hijacked and distorted to the very opposite of what you intended? Perhaps you've experienced people poisoning the well, so that despite your best intentions, your motives have become not only suspect, but outrageously misconstructed. And this is the problem. And the people who take offense at things I or others say at a Biblical Worldview Summit, or write in one of our newsletters, not because of anything we've said or intended, but because of a society which has become so toxic and so propagandized, most people now prefer the lies to the truth, prefer the darkness to the light, prefer secularism to the gospel, prefer evolutionism to real science. We've got to a situation now where it's easier to deceive a person than to convince them that they have been deceived. In this world war of worldviews, words are weapons. Ideas have consequences. Terminology is not neutral. It makes all the difference what terminology you use, whether you're pro-life or anti-choice, whether you're pro-family or anti-gay. And the terminology determines whether it's positive or negative, doesn't it? In Romans 3 we read, their throat is an open grave, with their tongues they practice deceit. The poison of asps or snakes is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways. In other words, littering their path behind them. The way of peace they have not known. There is no fear of God before their eyes. Noam Chomsky has observed that the smart way to keep people passive and obedient is to strictly limit the spectrum of acceptable opinion. But allow very lively debate within that narrow spectrum. And so we find in many universities and campuses of the world today, you're not allowed to say this and you're not allowed to think that. You can debate on these little fields here, but you're not allowed to speak about any of this. And so on. Media control, mind control. In the past, to suppress dissent, merely accusing a person of heresy could cower most, because the consequence of being accused of being a heretic could mean that you end up being burned at the stake, like Joan of Arc in 1415. Or treason. That was enough to silence dissent, because if you're guilty of treason, you could have your head chopped off or sent to the gulag and put before a firing squad. Today, hate speech is the modern equivalent for silencing free speech. Heresy and treason doesn't have the same effect these days, but hate speech, oh, that's a catch-all. That'll work. Merely accusing somebody of racism, homophobia, Islamophobia, or bigotry is sufficient to silence opposition and prevent a free and open discussion. This is an example of toxic terminology and how words can be weaponized. Pro-choice is actually not pro-choice when it comes to education. They don't believe in choice when it comes to education at all. Liberal leftists normally reject the rights of those who would choose Bible-based, parental-controlled home education. You don't have the right to choose when it comes to education. You've got to follow Karl Marx's dictum of state-controlled education, state-licensed teachers, state-approved textbooks. Most pro-choicers tend to oppose choice when it comes to conscientious objectors amongst medical staff who choose not to use their healing skills to participate in the taking of an innocent life through abortion. Do you know that in America today, more than, it's no longer almost, this is an older picture, more black children are aborted than are born. A true feminist would fight for the rights of pre-born women. Do you know, statistically, vastly more female babies are aborted than male. And the reason for this is in Asian cultures in particular. China, which for decades has had a one-child policy, and India, where again there's a prejudice against female babies, they do amniocentesis tests and others, and when they determine that the baby is to be female, they choose an abortion. But they won't choose an abortion if it's a male. And so there's hundreds of millions more males in Asia than females. Massive disproportion due to the sex selection abortions. Now, if you're a real feminist, any real feminist should be opposing abortion. They're not real at all. And if abortion is such an acceptable choice, why do photographs of abortion make pro-choicers so angry? An example of newspeak double-think deception in a headline is, "Abortion is healthcare." This makes it a human right. That was the title published in Daily Maverick, 14th of August, 2020. This was authored by Teleng Mofokeng, who is described, now how's this for a mouthful for someone's job description, United Nations Commission on Human Rights Special Rapporteur for Physical and Mental Health. Yow. Talk about complex, but this is the title of this UN propagandist who wrote this unbelievably deceptive article. The Daily Maverick identified the article as first published in Section 27's Abortion in Eastern Southern Africa publication. Now, just as in George Orwell's dystopian, futuristic 1948 novel, Mini-Truth, or the Ministry of Truth, deals in disinformation, lies, and propaganda. And Mini-Peace, or Ministry of Peace, wages war. And Mini-Love, or Ministry of Love, engages in torture. And Mini-Plenty, or Ministry of Plenty, deals with rationing and ensures starvation and shortages. As George Orwell said, political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder sound respectable. Like, we don't assassinate people, we terminate with extreme prejudice. We don't bomb civilians, it's collateral damage, or saturation bombing, or strategic bombing, or area bombing, and so on and so forth. This UN propaganda piece is a classic of disinformation and inverted reality. The fact is that abortion is recognized as the taking of an innocent life throughout almost every country in Africa, with the notable exception of ANC-ruled South Africa. Now, this is their map. Green means abortion is legalized for any reason. Only country in Africa that's got it totally green is South Africa. All the other countries in Africa forbid abortion. Oh, there's Tunisia. Tunisia and South Africa are the only two countries in Africa with legalized abortion for any reason. But every abortion stops a beating heart. Abortion is the killing of an innocent human being. Most people and most law courts in Africa recognize that. Abortion leaves one dead and one wounded. One heart stops, another heart breaks. All women who have had an abortion suffer from severe psychological consequences. And the medical term for this is post-abortion syndrome, very similar to post-traumatic stress syndrome. However, according to the United Nations propagandist, all states in Africa should legalize abortion, which she describes as reproductive health. Reproductive health? What has killing a baby got to do with reproductive or health? And a human right? What about the right to the baby? Evidently unconcerned about the right to life of preborn babies, mimicking rights of dignity, bodily integrity, equality, safety and security, health, reproductive justice, and freedom to choose. I mean, these are noble words, but condemns pro-life legislation which outlaws abortion. Throughout almost every country in Africa, this is described as oppression and discrimination. Legalized discrimination, oppression of women, and singles out Malawi and Botswana and Namibia for laws that seek to punish those who work in the abortion services. I mean, just analyze what's being said there. They have laws which seek to punish those who work in abortion services. Now, I'm sure what they would say is, we have laws against murder and infanticide. And those people who use a medical practice as a guise for killing babies get prosecuted. Well, isn't that the first job of government, to protect innocent life and to punish murder? But the way it's phrased, laws that seek to punish those who work in abortion services. You can imagine Italy, some mafia chap writing about how the government has laws seeking to punish those who work in the family, which is another term for the mafia, which is organized crime. You know, the mentality. Interestingly enough, was it about a year and a half ago in Nairobi, Kenya, 10,000 sponsored delegates from all over Africa came for a colossal conference to promote abortion. World Health Organization fit the bill, put up in massive hotels, three-course meals, the whole deal. But unfortunately, Kenya is very pro-life, and the Kenyan people and the Kenyan pro-life is really mobilized well. And the Kenyan president is very pro-life too. And he didn't play the game when they invited him to open the conference. The Kenyan president made it clear that abortion is murder and the right to life of preborn babies is non-negotiable. And as the host president in the host country, they expect him to behave himself and, you know, say nice things, and then they could go ahead with their promotion of abortion. And the end result was the vast majority of delegates from almost every country in Africa totally rejected the UN's agenda of trying to promote abortion, legalize abortion in Africa, and it ended up in complete disarray. Think of the investment in bringing 10,000 sponsored delegates to promote abortion. They were hoping that this could open up Africa to legalize abortion, and had exactly the opposite effect. Well, for muddying the waters and poisoning the well and weaponizing words and using toxic terminology, Mifeking's article is pretty hard to beat. Mifeking complains about the disconnection of abortion from primary health and sexual and reproductive rights, which she condemns as systemic anti-choice positions. Again, just analyze what's being said here. The disconnection between killing babies from primary health and sexual reproductive rights. Well, of course there's a disconnect. Exactly the opposite. And imagine people talk about the disconnect between trying to save and heal lives and trying to murder. How can there not be a disconnect? But such is weaponizing words and toxic terminology. Then ominously, this UN propagandist Mifeking complains about South Africa's choice on termination of Pregnancy Act 1996, where she alleges many women in the country are denied access to abortion services. Now, this is a very positive point, actually. Yes, Nelson Mandela signed abortion into law 1st of February 1997. And tragically, 1.7 million babies have been killed in South Africa legally through abortion since 1997. But here's the good news. Less and less doctors and nurses and pharmacists are willing to take any part in abortion. And there are entire districts, vast amounts of hospitals, and even provinces in South Africa where they cannot find a single medical professional willing to take part in abortion. So, back to Mafeking's rant. On the grounds of moral and religious beliefs and those health providers, there are only a few practitioners in public health facilities who provide abortion services in South Africa. In other words, abortion is legal throughout South Africa, but it's not available in most of South Africa because most of the medical professionals refuse to have anything to do with it. Well, praise God, we've had a bit more effect than we had perhaps thought. So evidently, Mafeking and the UN who finances it do not tolerate conscientious objectors on moral and religious grounds and want to criminalize those doctors and nurses and other health professionals who don't want to pervert the healing profession by taking innocent lives through the violence of abortion. This article is an ominous warning of a new concerted effort to not only stigmatize those countries that seek to protect the most innocent life of all from the violence and injustice of abortion, but to criminalize Christian and other pro-life doctors and nurses and other health professionals like pharmacists from their right to choose to be conscientious objectors in such a highly controversial matter as abortion. Let me give an example. In 1979, I was conscripted, called up to the South African Army. Now, even though South Africa was in a war at the time, a very serious war, and we're facing a massive communist army in Angola, and there were Soviet warships around our harbors and all around the coast, and there were Soviet jets and bombers in neighboring Angola, Zimbabwe, Zambia, and in Mozambique. Maputo, very short flying time to Pretoria. We had our Mirages waiting at Hoedspruit every day, pilots strapped in, ready to fly, engines ticking over, ready to take off in an instant if a hostile aircraft came in, because they would have very short time to intercept any attempt on a raid on Pretoria and so on. That was the kind of situation we were facing in 1979. However, the South African Army, like many other armies, provides for conscientious objectors. If a person said, I want to be a non-combatant, they were allowed to be a non-combatant role, like a medic and so on. And if they didn't want to carry a weapon, they didn't have to carry a weapon. They made provision for conscientious objectors. Many were those like the Jehovah's Witnesses who didn't even want to wear a uniform. And they provided for alternative service for those who did not want to serve in the army. And this is so in many countries in the world. Conscientious objectors are provided for and respected. Because even though we may believe that our cause is just and right and so on, and the need is urgent, you still got to respect the difference of opinions of a minority of your citizens who may not want to go into them. And so I might have disagreed with those conscientious objectors, even though once upon a time I was one of them. But all the same, you still respect the right of people to disagree on conscience issues, on controversial issues. But the UN does not want conscientious objectors in the medical profession. They want to say that abortion is a health care. How can abortion be health care? Real health care actually saves lives, doesn't take it. It's absolutely vital that we speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, that we have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them. Who will rise up for me against the evildoers? Who will make a stand for me against the workers of iniquity? Abortion is our national sin. God will not bless a nation that destroys its children. Abortion kills babies. Abortion does not make you unpregnant. It makes you the mother of a dead baby. Abortion is not a human right. It's a human sacrifice. Rescue those being led away to death. Hold back those staggering towards slaughter. Abortion is murder. And we need to make this known right in the university campuses, on the streets. We march for life. We organize life chains. We hand out literature. We stand for life. But of course, according to Mafeking, pro-lifers should be criminalized. Handing out gospel literature and pro-life literature at traffic lights should be criminalized. We say pregnant women need support, not abortion. Life is sacred from conception to natural death. Abortion is the ultimate child abuse. Choose life so that you and your children may live. A person is a person no matter how small. The Lord hates hands that shed innocent blood. ANC seems to stand for abortion, necklacing, and communism. or abortion, nepotism, and corruption. And we need to stand for life. If you want to see the video that Ndumiso just did, Life Chain 2020, it helps promote the March for Life coming up at the end of this month. Sanctity Life Sunday is the Sunday closest to the legalization of abortion in South Africa. This year, 31st of January. And then on the 1st of February, which is a Monday this year, we'll be marching to Parliament in our annual March for Life. Now, we've also noticed that many who proclaim themselves to be pro-choice, declaring, my body, my choice. They don't believe in choice when it comes to mandatory wearing of masks. So those who normally support freedom to protest when it involves Black Lives Matter, EFF or Antifa, rioters looting shops, burning buildings, throwing rocks and Molotov cocktails, petrol bombs at police, they support that right. But they oppose the right of the hospitality industry to peacefully protest against unconstitutional lockdowns, or the right of citizens to protest against draconian lockdown regulations in the name of combating a virus. So we're witnessing an unprecedented war against freedom of speech. I don't think there's ever been more censorship than in 2020. In the history of the world, the amount of censorship in the last year is staggering. Many of those who claim to be for freedom of speech oppose freedom of speech on college campuses or on social media. And when it comes to pro-life and pro-family and pro-marriage, creation science, or those who are against unconstitutional lockdown regulations or any other politically incorrect position, many liberals claim to be tolerant, but they strenuously oppose any tolerance for pro-lifers, home educators, or those who oppose mandatory vaccines. And those who refuse mandatory mask wearing or are convinced that lockdown regulations are unconstitutional, or anyone who has a different view to that of a radical liberal left. Plato, 2,400 years ago, said, strange times are these in which we live, when old and young are taught falsehoods at school, and the person that dares to tell the truth is called at once a lunatic and a fool. As Aristotle pointed out, tolerance and apathy are the last virtues of a dying society. Societies are far gone in depravity when toleration is considered a good thing in itself without regard to the thing tolerated. Let me say, when I was a firefighter, we were very intolerant of fire hazards. Doctors should be intolerant of viruses and disease. Police should be intolerant of crime. Politicians should be intolerant of corruption. It's good to be intolerant of bad things. We should be intolerant of litter or cruelty to animals. We should be intolerant of deforestation. There's a lot of things that you should be intolerant of, and that would be a good thing. But right now, tolerance is good, except you shouldn't tolerate Christianity or pro-life or pro-family or homeschooling. He who dares not offend cannot be honest. And this is the thing. We're living in a fake world where a lot of fake people will say what people want to hear to tickle their ears so that they will get approval. And if you want to be a pastor of a mega church and you want to have a huge following and you want to be super popular on social media or whatever it is, there's certain things you must say and there's certain things you must not say. And if you offend people, well, most people aren't willing to be offended. What they want is to have their ears tickled, and they want you to keep saying the same soothing lies over and over. George Orwell said, journalism is printing what someone else does not want printed. Everything else is public relations, propaganda. There are those who support the hate speech bill, which does not even begin to deal with genuine hate speech of Antifa, BLM, LGBTQRS, communist revolutionaries, radical Islamic jihadists. I mean, there's some hate speech for you. Europe is the cancer, Islam is the answer. Exterminate those who slander Islam. Is that hate speech? No. Behead those who insult Islam? Is that hate speech? Definitely not. However, in the name of combating hate speech, most of the liberal left radicals seek to suffocate free speech of Christians to oppose or even question the politically correct, radically revolutionary agenda. What is their strategy? Corrupt and conquer. Too many today, non-racial means promoting race politics and race quotas and race hatred and playing the race card no end. It turns out those screaming racist the loudest are the worst racists of all. You can't fight racism with racism. Black Lives Matter is not true to its own slogan. They apparently don't think Black Lives Matter in Sudan. They've never spoken up for the millions of Christians suffering there under Islamic persecution. They don't seem to think Black Lives Matter in the Congo. Millions of Christians have been murdered in the Congo over the years without any of these liberals caring about that. They don't seem to think that Black Lives Matter in Zimbabwe. Why should they? It's a communist system of oppression. They support communism. They don't seem to think that Black Lives Matter in Nigeria. I mean, in a 5-year period, from 2010 to 2015, 1,000 churches were attacked in northern Nigeria. 17,000 Christians killed by Boko Haram terrorists. That's just a 5-year period. But their lives didn't matter to BLM either, did they? They don't seem to think Black Lives Matter in the womb either, because BLM supports abortion. BLM went out of their way to support Kermit Gosnell, America's worst serial killer. So apparently most Black Lives Matter do not matter to BLM. BLM stands for Burn, Loot, Murder, Baal, Lucifer, Moloch, something like that. George Orwell's dystopian 1984 novel now seems ominously prophetic. First published in 1949, Orwell's 1984 envisages a future omnipresent government surveillance system with public manipulation through the mass media, the cult of worshipping the party leader, historic revisionism, intimidation, and social engineering. All of this no longer seems like a joke. In George Orwell's 1984 novel, he warned of the coming newspeak, where words are hijacked to further the totalitarian agenda of the revolutionaries. And by the way, did you notice, if you've read 1984, it's set in England. And George Orwell had been a policeman in the British Empire. He'd been a journalist, he'd been editor, he worked for the BBC, and he was a propagandist during the Second World War for the British. And he based his vision of the future on his experience in the BBC and as a propagandist and a journalist and editor, where he saw things were going, and he is talking about Britain. Many people miss that. Orwell predicted thought crimes punished by thought police, and that's happening in Britain right now. Those who question newspeak of Big Brother are guilty of thought crimes which will be prosecuted by thought police. If thought corrupts language, then language can corrupt thought. Have you noticed how words have been changed, redefined, new words brought in? Mini-peace ensures perpetual war. Ministry of Truth uses lies and propaganda to distort all information, news, entertainment, education, and arts. The people will believe what the media tells them to believe. The Ministry of Truth has also vaporized or expunged from the public record opponents of the state who could not be debated or argued with. They just deplatformed them. These would become unpersons who would disappear down the memory hole. Ministry of Love would torture, terrify, and crush all dissent and resistance. The Ministry of Love would also organize the 2 minutes hate and hate week campaigns to distract and channel the anger and frustration of masses towards a real or imagined enemy. We've seen this in South Africa. Seen it in Cape Town, 2015. They had a hate week on campus on Roads Must Fall. Exactly like Orwell predicted. Just channel people's anger. Forget about government corruption. Forget about the water shortages. Forget about the power failures. Forget about all of it's all the fault of the founder of the university who died 100 years ago. If we could just remove his statue, everything would be solved. This is hate week. This is redirect people from real issues towards a fake issue for distraction. War is peace. Ignorance is strength. Slavery is freedom. The most effective way to destroy people is to deny and obliterate their own understanding of their history. Most of our people don't even know our history. Whoever controls the past controls the future. Whoever controls the present controls the past. What he means, if you control the present, you can rewrite the textbooks. To change the past, at least in people's perceptions, to change the future, the way the party wants it. That's why Karl Marx said, the first battlefield is the rewriting of history. Every record has been destroyed or falsified. Every book has been rewritten. Every picture has been repainted. Every statue and street building has been renamed. Every date has been altered. And the process is continuing day by day, minute by minute. History has stopped. Nothing exists except an endless present where the party is always right. Everything faded into mist. The past was erased. The razor was forgotten. The lie became truth. Enemies of the revolutionary state would be vaporized, become unpersoned, and disappear down the memory hole, or, in our words, be deleted and deplatformed by big tech social media platform censors. This is what we're facing today. If liberty means anything at all, it means the right to tell people what they don't want to hear. We should always have a respect and a place for dissent. Because, you know, the dissenter's often right. The majority is normally wrong. The further society drifts from truth, the more they'll hate those who speak the truth. Truth is hate to those who hate the truth. Have you noticed how Marxists call their violent riots? Protests. They call the murder of babies choice. They call perversion an alternative lifestyle. They call hate speech politically correct. They call it racism diversity. They call it intolerance, tolerance. They call it violence, peace, or mostly peaceful protest. They call it looting of flat screen TVs or Nike shoes a protest. They label your free speech hate speech, and what you're thinking, a thought crime. The only slavery that seems to matter to the radical left is a slavery that ended over 2 centuries ago, which evangelical Christians, led by William Wilberforce, brought to an end, by the way. Name me one Muslim abolitionist. Name me one atheist abolitionist. Name an agnostic abolitionist. No. Evangelical, Bible-believing Protestant Christians were the ones who brought an end to the slave trade. Historic fact. But opposing slavery today, like in Red China or Mauritania or Saudi Arabia, for example, is considered irrelevant and not worthy of any attention. Don't worry about the real slaves today. There are 42 million slaves in the world today. There's more slaves in the world today than there was when William Wilberforce alerted the 19th century Protestant movement's fighters. Do you know that the Black Lives Matter co-founder, Charles Wade, was convicted of human trafficking? What's human trafficking? Just the modern word for slavery. So is that not ironic? BLM co-founder Charles Wade was arrested in 2016 for 7 counts of human trafficking, slavery, including pimping underage girls. If you try to call attention to the desperate plight of Black Zimbabweans suffering under brutal Marxist dictatorship, you'll be accused of being a racist. Caring for Black people is racism? If you try to speak up for those who cannot speak up for themselves, preborn babies, and you try to advocate the right to life of preborn babies, you'll be accused of being anti-choice. Pro-choice is a lie. Babies don't choose to die. You don't have the right to choose anything the left disapproves of, apparently. My body, my choice is what they shout. However, if you choose not to wear my mandatory mask, you'll be accused of being guilty of a hate crime. Put on your mask! Where's your mask? That's a tolerant left speaking, by the way. Apparently, when it really is your body, you don't have a choice at all. Anyone who disagrees with radical revolutionary rhetoric will be accused of being a far right-wing extremist. Ever heard of a far left-wing extremist? Those making such judgmental generalizations may be far left radical extremists attempting to silence dissent by shouting incendiary slogans. All whites are racist. Is that not a racist statement? Isn't it judgmental? White people are recessive genetic defects and subhuman. Black people can literally wipe out the white race. Is that racism? Nope, nothing to see here. Pass on. BBBEE, racial quotas in the workplace and sports, is racial discrimination. Let's face it. Lots of goodies on the gravy train for the elite, and the basic person just suffers. Nothing is their fault. Any criticism of their violence and controlled racism is dismissed as racism. And the radical left is no longer willing to even discuss or debate the merits of a case using facts and logic. but generally choose to shout insults and ad hominem invectives in an aggressive attempt to stifle debate and to silence alternative viewpoints. You know what ad hominem means. Ad hominem means arguing against the person. So, in soccer, you are to kick the ball. If you kick the other player, that's a foul. It's not allowed. So, as I say, play the ball, not the man. In debate, you deal with the issue, the facts. If you start attacking the other person, you're only saying that because you're a worthless, half-wit, brainless imbecile. Well, what does that prove? Using insults against the other person in no way proves your case. Kick the ball, don't kick the person. Play the ball, not the man. When you resort to ad hominem arguments, you're just saying that because you're stupid. And that's the kind of things I've actually heard the left resorting to because they can't debate the issues. Everything is your fault. Any attempt to respond to these generalizations and condemnations will be dismissed as judgmental or racist. Like spoiled brats, these crybabies, these radicals are resorting to temper tantrum tactics to intimidate and bully other people into compliance to the ever-increasing irrational demands. They scream, they rant, they rave, they set fire to logic, constitution, reason, Bible, whatever. They demand their safe spaces and so on. Bunch of snowflakes. And they leave ruin and wreckage in their wake. Liberals preach the gospel of victimization. I am a victim and you are to blame. Nothing is my fault. The previously disadvantaged refers to those who received subsidized housing, free medical care, and free education. The previous advantage refers to those who are overtaxed to pay for free medical care, free education, and subsidized housing for millions of migrants pouring into our country from free liberated countries for opportunities, freedoms, and benefits that they couldn't enjoy in their own liberated countries. Now, how do you translate toxic terminology? White privilege refers to people like me who were caned at school, conscripted in the army, put in harm's way, we were throwing all kinds of metal at you, to protect black tribesmen from being terrorized by communist freedom fighters and taxed to aid the people we were accused of oppressing. See, communists seem to be inoculated against logic. Since we are living in the most intolerant age with the worst racism ever seen in history, where hate speech is being propagated by those who claim to be against free speech, and free speech is now at risk by those who claim to be for freedom. If I say all lives matter, then I'm condemned as a racist. If an American stands for his country's flag or national anthem, he has to apologize. You're not allowed to go to church to worship, but you can burn down a church as part of a protest. You cannot open your business, but you can loot and destroy someone else's business. The police in America are accused of being racist pigs, but Antifa and BLM mobs can destroy cities because they are protesters. You cannot protest against oppressive COVID lockdown regulations, but you can riot against racism when you want. You cannot play with friends at the park, but you can destroy the park. You're not allowed to protect your monuments and your history, but you can graffiti, vandalize, and pull down national monuments. You're not allowed to have an opinion on these matters at all. And if you express an opinion other than the mandated mantras of the politically correct crowd, you're a racist, bigot, guilty of hate speech who deserves abuse. In America, you can riot with Black Lives Matter, but if you go to a Trump rally, then COVID-19 magically reappears and you're a threat to public health. Communism is a mind virus, the most destructive, deadly force in history. Identity politics seek to define people as a group and pits groups against the other, aiming at complete state ownership of your life where state power supersedes even the church. Confuse, divide, and conquer. Corrupt and conquer, confuse, divide, and conquer. That's this strategy. For centuries it's been recognized that freedom of worship is essential. Freedom of religion, freedom of conscience, freedom of opinion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of movement, freedom, free enterprise. These are absolutely essential foundations for freedom. It's a testimony to the insidious success of cultural Marxism that all these essential foundations for Western civilization are under relentless attack today. And any attempts to expose the inevitable consequence of these destructive tendencies are shouted down, censored and deleted from many internet platforms. We need to recognize how revolutions work. We need to read or remember George Orwell's ominous warnings in 1984, and Alexander Solzhenitsyn's writings like in the Gulag Archipelago, and Otto Scott's Robes Prayer inside the French Revolution. These will go a long way towards understanding the tactics of guilt manipulation, gaslighting, Stockholm Syndrome, intimidating, bullying, lying, manipulating the masses in order to destroy what centuries of Christian sacrifice have so painstakingly built up. The Word of God commands us, always be ready to give a defense to everyone who asks you a reason for the hope that's within you. Always be ready. And that's what we try and do in a BWS, is enable us to be ready to defend the faith and to give a Christian explanation of what real economics or justice or education should be. And so we as Bible-believing Christians must respond as Dr. Martin Luther responded at Worms before the assembled political might and ecclesiastical might of Europe. 18th April, 1521. This year marks the 500th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther's phenomenal stand, which expresses in seed form the foundations of Western civilization. Freedom of conscience, freedom of thought, freedom of opinion, constitutionalism, priest of all believers, all these things. Unless I am convinced by scripture or by clear reasoning that I am in error. For popes and councils have often erred and contradicted themselves. I cannot recant, for I'm subject to the scriptures I've quoted. My conscience is captive to the word of God. It is unsafe and dangerous to do anything against one's conscience. Here I stand, I cannot do otherwise, so help me God, amen. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty by which Christ has made us free, and do not be entangled again by yoke of bondage. Scripture alone is the ultimate authority. Any questions? Any comments? Okay, so the question of my body, my choice when it comes to abortion and the danger of backstreet abortions and so on. The first thing is, it cannot be your body if it's got another heart, soul, mind, lungs, and let's face it, in many cases, different gender as well. So how can it be my body when there's all these different organs within? Plainly, you're talking about another heart, another brainwave. So it's not your body. It's another body within you at that stage. The point about backstreet abortions, just because some murders are being done sloppily and killing maybe some people aren't targeted, you can't legalize murder to make murder safer. So we don't want murder done in the wrong way, let's do it in a safe way. Nobody thinks like that when it comes to any normal murder. So why would we give a different category of murder? Well, in this case, we're going to legalize it. The arguments against the right to life of preborn babies have been dealt with in our, for example, our Make a Difference book. We catalogued an answer to every single one of the questions. And interestingly, we had just done the draft for it, and I was doing a proofreading of it, and I sat at Parliament when we were doing the debates on the termination of pregnancy bill. And there and then, I had these ANC people raising the different objections, and they not only asked all the questions in our book that we already had typeset and ready, but they asked them in the same order. From overpopulation, unwanted street children, I mean, they went through the whole lot, and it was kind of humorous because they're really not original. And they've been well refuted. And we've got them on our ChristianAction.org.za website to help you with that. Good. Any other comments, questions? I certainly believe in freedom of religion. I believe in freedom of worship and freedom of conscience. And therefore, in an ideal world, we would want people to choose Bible-based Christianity by free will, by persuasion, by education, not by compulsion and force. Now, the Roman Catholic Church did the compulsion business, compulsively forcing people, Spanish Inquisition, all that sort of thing. And the Protestant Reformation was a revolt against that. We should not have the state or the church trying to enforce what they think is right on everyone else. Let the free marketplace of ideas decide. And so, as Protestants, while we know that these other religions are false, I still believe the way we should defeat them is by persuasion and education, not by compulsion, coercion, or legislation. Oh, well, there's some government laws that the government should enforce, such as protecting the right to life of innocent against war. But that isn't a religious law. That's basically, government should be enforcing the tablets of the law, the Ten Commandments, basic things, you know, sanctity of life, sanctity of marriage, sanctity of property, sanctity of contracts, against blasphemy and against a slander, libel, of course, but outside that you've got freedom of speech. Those are the only two limitations on freedom of speech and the Ten Commandments. So the Ten Commandments is your base of your rights, your obligations, your duties, all laws. So there's some things that the government should enforce, but they don't enforce your conscience. They cannot enforce and command your conscience. And what the Roman Catholic Church tried to do in the Middle Ages obviously was wrong, and it failed. And the Protestant Reformation decisively refuted that. Yes, that's right. I mean, abortion, the issue here is, when does life begin and what is abortion? Life begins at conception, abortion is murder. This isn't a religious conviction, this is a medical fact. It's biology 101. We all know that the absence of a heartbeat is a confirmation of death, the absence of a brainwave is a confirmation of death, the presence of a brainwave and the presence of a heartbeat is confirmation of life. So you can just solve this in biological. You can't say, for example, look, slavery is my choice. You may not like slavery, but the state doesn't have the right to stop me slavery. Or, hey, look, you may not be a paedophile, but you can't determine that guy can't be a paedophile. No. There's some basic rules, which are summarized in Ten Commandments, that the state must enforce. But that doesn't mean that they have the right to command your conscience or how you worship. That's in the free market. Well, I don't know how it can be illegal or legal, because gay marriage is a fiction. There's no such thing. Marriage has been defined by God. Marriage is a ordinance of the church. It's not the job of the state to tell you what marriage is and what marriage isn't. If the state wants to make whatever they want to call it, some civil union, but it's not a marriage. A marriage is something defined in the Bible, defined by God, defined at creation. It's not for any state to try to interfere with religious freedom and so on. So it's not a matter of banning gay marriage. It's not a matter of legalizing gay marriage. Gay marriage is just a fiction that some people want to play some delusional games. Well, let's pretend. Well, that is not the job of the state to enforce this delusion or this perversion.